On November 5th, 2009, Judith Enck was appointed Regional Administrator of Region 2 of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency by President Barack Obama. After 7 years, she will step down from that post on Friday. As Regional Administrator, her responsibilities were wide-ranging in cooperation with state and regional authorities in New Jersey, New York, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and 8 federally recognized Indian nations. She was responsible for managing a staff of about 900 and overseeing an annual budget of approximately $700 million. Before she leaves the office, she joins us this morning for her exit interview, if you will, about what she accomplished and what the future holds. And it's a great pleasure to welcome our dear friend Judith Enck back to the roundtable. Well, how are you?
Hey, Joe, I'm good. I'm, you know, happy to be wrapping up a wonderful tenure at EPA. Super worried about the future of EPA. Sad to be leaving Brooklyn. Happy to be moving back to Rensselaer County. So, you know, I think I'm all over the map, but generally I'm good.
A bit of a mixed bag, sure. Before we start talking about your tenure and what's going on with you, as we speak, Scott Pruitt is having a confirmation hearing to be the new head of the EPA. What do you make of that? What do you make of that choice? And where does your concern lie after having been in your position for 7 years? Under a very different circumstance, of course.
Yeah, I caught a little bit of the beginning of the hearing. I'll read the transcript when it's done. I thought it was ironic that as the hearing was unfolding, the New York Times had a breaking news story that the Earth has set a temperature record for the third straight year.
Correct.
Scientists reported today that the Earth reached its highest temperature on record in 2016, trouncing a record set only a year earlier. I was reading that on my phone as I was watching a little bit of the hearing in which the EPA administrator nominee was saying that oil companies are the true stewards of the environment. So there's a little bit of a disconnect, and I think this is going to be a very challenging period, no matter who is the head of EPA, because the incoming administration seems to be minimizing the impacts of climate change. And I think that's going to be an enormous problem.
You have been an environmental advocate for a long, long time. When you see how, and I believe as many of us feel, that we are in a dire situation right now, and some say an irreversible situation, When you look at the possibility of a policy and an ideology that seems to be hands off on doing anything positive, how do you view that not only in the of what it'll do for the future of this planet, but also in just rolling back so much of what you've accomplished in the last 8 years in office?
Well, I'm less concerned about rolling back what I've personally worked on and far more concerned about the future of the planet and the health of Americans. You know, there are some really important high-profile issues like climate change that will be in the public debate. But there are also important issues that EPA tackles that does not get a lot of public attention, or it doesn't in the beginning and then it does at the end. And so it's kind of the stuff going on behind the curtain that also worries me. I'm going to keep an eye on budget cuts at EPA. I really hope that the staff is not reduced, but that's something that we're bracing for. You are correct. I've been working on environmental protection and preservation since the Mesozoic age. It's been a while, and I've never been more concerned than I am today.
And is it because there just seems to be a disregard for the science and for what so many of you who have been fighting this fight for a long time know?
I think you put your finger on it. If you follow the science, you will have good environmental policy. You know, I read a paper where 98% of scientists agree that climate change is real and that human activity is significantly contributing to the warming of the planet. If we could just take the science and translate that into government policy, we would all be okay. But we know that that's not how it works. And so now more than ever, we need average citizens, students, not to assume that their federal environmental regulatory agencies are going to be looking out for the public interest. So that means that we as Americans need to be very well informed and very involved and be the environmental cop on the beat, making sure that we all have clean drinking water and air quality improves and wetlands are not filled in. But this is going to be a challenging time. The thing that does give me hope is while I'm leaving EPA on Friday along with my chief of staff, everyone else at EPA in Region 2 is a career professional, a career civil servant, which I think has a really esteemed status these days. And we need the professional staff at EPA to make sure that the law is enforced and that things are handled properly.
But obviously the concern being, and you mentioned this earlier, that that staff gets cut and resources get cut in the work that you've been doing.
Yeah, and that has real-life impacts. You know, one of the issues that I'm proudest of working on is air toxics problem in Tonawanda, New York, just north of Buffalo. We were able to reduce benzene emissions by 90%. That was a criminal enforcement case, a civil enforcement case that came together in the end resulted in dramatic public health improvements. You know, I want to make sure somehow that those enforcement cases continue. The issue of drinking water in Hoosick Falls and Petersburg and Newburgh, which WAMC has so ably reported on, that was EPA playing an oversight role where in the case of Hoosick Falls, the state really fell down on the job. So EPA was able to step in and work toward a better outcome. There are countless examples where we've been able to convene important people. We've been able to do written comments. We've been able to make phone calls to really argue for a higher level of environmental protection. And we've just got to somehow find our way to make sure that those initiatives by EPA continue.
Until Friday, Judith Enck is Regional Administrator of Region 2 of the EPA and our guest this morning. So when you look at issues, and I realize the answer to some of these questions may be simply, I don't know, we don't know, but when you look at an issue, something that you've worked on for so long and has been such a part of the environmental climate and the environmental activism climate in this region of the cleanup of the Hudson River, where does that stand now?
Well, thankfully, a lot of the work has already been done. The Obama administration was the first one to actually get removal of PCBs from the Hudson River. And I know that there's been some confusion about this lately, but we were able to get 310,000 pounds of PCBs out of the river in the upper 40 miles, which I think is a very positive thing. GE paid about $1.7 billion to do that work, so that money did not come from taxpayers. Work will continue, particularly along the floodplains. There's land that borders the river that needs to be remediated. We'll continue to work on that. And EPA is in the middle of a five-year review to see if the enough PCBs were removed from the upper river. If they were, then the decision stands. If they were not, then there's an opportunity for more dredging. The state of New York also has the opportunity, a golden opportunity, to require dredging of the Champlain Canal. So I think the Hudson River PCB issue is advanced enough that is not particularly at risk. You know, the $1.7 billion has already been spent. The massive quantity of PCBs have been removed. Where that may be problematic is if the EPA five-year review shows that more dredging needs to happen, that could be a flashpoint. And your listeners should look for that news in April or May.
Were you disappointed by the state report and the state telling the EPA that the six-year project was a failure and that the EPA should have done more, including cleanup of the river below from Troy to New York City?
Yes, I was disappointed because the state of New York was a partner all along with EPA and knew exactly what we were doing. This issue has really dragged on for a long time, and after literally 25, 30 years of debate, and to hear, you know, when the state said that, I think maybe 2 weeks ago, that was the first time the state put in writing that they wanted more dredging below the upper 40 miles where the vast majority of PCBs are. So, you know, I think it's always good if the state wants to do more. They are welcome to do more, but I think overall the professional staff at EPA and myself are very proud of getting the 310,000 pounds of PCBs out of the upper Hudson River. That had never happened before. So, you know, wise people say follow what I do, not what I say, and I think EPA has really done a lot.
But even with that with that dynamic in place, you do have to look at what a changing EPA and an EPA in a Trump administration and how they would respond to such a request from the state of New York.
Yeah, you know, that is, I think, the wait and see situation. Now, the nice thing about EPA is we have been very transparent. There is a public record. So, for instance, we're doing this five-year review. We will have test results that show PCB levels in fish, and all of that information is available to the public. So on something of this magnitude, I think, you know, the public will have an opportunity to be informed and hold regulators accountable if they shy away from their responsibility.
When you mentioned this earlier about the about Hoosick Falls and the water situation there, last week there was both Senator Schumer and Gillibrand asking the EPA to expedite the Hoosick Falls Superfund process, and again a lot of work that can be done, and so this is another wait and see situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a more serious one, though, because the work hasn't even started.
Right.
EPA has done the sampling and the legwork to see if Hoosick Falls is eligible for a federal Superfund designation, and unfortunately it is. The groundwater contamination by PFOA is quite significant. So the way it works is EPA does a lot of the sampling and monitoring and literally scores these sites to see if they're eligible for federal Superfund, does a public comment period. We did that in the case of Hoosick Falls. We went to Hoosick Falls, did a community meeting at the request of the mayor to explain what's involved in Superfund designation. All the public comments supported Superfund designation except one, and that is St. Gobain, the potential polluter. They did not want federal Superfund status. That's in the public record. Typically, EPA will make final decisions on Superfund status twice a year, in the spring and the fall. So unless there is slippage in the schedule, which there might be with a new administration, look for a final decision in March. Don't be alarmed if that all slips to April, because a new administration has to get their footing. Mm-hmm. But if it slips past April, then go ahead and be alarmed.
You know, you're walking out the door, so I feel like I can ask you this question. I wouldn't have asked you this question a year ago, but I feel now I can ask you this question. Environmentally speaking, is New York cleaner than New Jersey?
um, Yes. I've enjoyed my work in New Jersey. It has an amazing toxic legacy, more federal Superfund sites than any other in any other state in the nation.
Right.
So, yes, the answer is yes. And Puerto Rico is less polluted than New York, and the U.S. Virgin Islands is less polluted than Puerto Rico. And it's been really interesting working on the pollution challenges in these four really different states and territories. And as you mentioned, I've also had the privilege of working with the eight Indian nations in New York, and that has been one of the favorite parts of my job. The federal government takes its relationship with Indian nations seriously. And we view them as government to government. And I'm afraid we've not done everything that all of the nations have wanted, but it certainly has been a good interaction and good discussions on some really, really important issues. When I first took the position at EPA, right before the president announced my appointment back in 2009, I was going to Washington, D.C. to a wedding with my family, and as we're driving down the New Jersey Turnpike, I did get kind of a pit in my stomach and said, oh my gosh, who's going to be responsible for regulating everything along the turnpike? And my family turned and said, you. It is daunting. But still a lot of work to do in New Jersey and New York.
Judith Henk is our guest, the EPA administrator, and leaving that post on Friday. And that was your decision even before the election, right? You were
yes,
looking to wrap up at that point.
Yeah, I was. I serve at the pleasure of the president, and I'm a big believer in every president deserves their own team. And so even if Hillary Clinton had won the election, I was planning on leaving. And now I'm really excited that my next opportunity will be at Elizabeth Hobbs School of Law, which is part of Pace University in the Lower Hudson Valley, where I will be a visiting scholar for the spring semester. And I am so excited to jump into that opportunity.
And that's right away. You're going to be, a position runs through May, and you'll be working with faculty and doing guest lectures and so forth.
Yes, and students, because boy, do we need energetic new environmental lawyers now more than ever. And I've always been really impressed with Pace. They turn out some really wonderful environmental lawyers. A bunch of lawyers at EPA went to Pace University. So it's going to be something different and something fun. And I think I have, maybe a week off before I start there, but I'm so excited to get started. I didn't want to delay.
Do you look forward to the idea of being an activist again? I mean, obviously, you've been an activist most of your life, and even in this position, you had an opportunity for that. But to go out of the federal government and to be able to say what you want to say and not have that over you as much, is that freeing?
I think it will be, yes. I haven't had that experience yet. So, and remember, I did 11 years with state government.
Sure.
And then 7 years with federal government, so 18 years in government. And you might find this odd, but I always felt like I've been an activist, even inside government. And I certainly had restraints that I didn't have.
Sure.
When I was a free agent almost with an environmental group. But when it came to public health protection, like drinking water in Hoosick Falls or air toxics in Tonawanda or cleaning up the Gowanus Canal, I actually had, I always said what I felt. And I went out on the limb a few times. And I chose to do that whenever there was a public health imperative. So it has not been as restrained as one would think. I think my press office might be a little happy to see me go because I gave them a little agita on a couple issues. So I am looking forward. And in fact, I've not been on social media at all. We were asked not to be on Facebook or Twitter as political appointees. And so I am what they call a Twitter lurker. I follow Twitter, but I typically don't post. I mean, I'll post really mundane stuff like red tail hawk spotted in Brooklyn. I figure that won't get me in trouble. But I am really looking forward to entering the world of Twitter. Follow me. It's AnkJ. And I'm going to have, I think, a couple things to say on the importance of a strong EPA and the importance of environmental protection. So I've kind of been like Rip Van Winkle in terms of social media, and I am itching to jump into the good parts of social media. I understand that most people these days get their news from Facebook, which I find a little surprising, so yeah. I better go figure out Facebook quick.
Yeah, and WAMC is always glad to hear that story, where people get their news from Facebook. One of the things that I think is interesting about it, though, is that everybody who you talk to, especially on the left, says, "Okay, so what do we do in a world of Trump?" And people say, "Well, we have to be vigilant, we have to be activists, we have to go out, we have to go into our community." So I would think for you, there's a opportunity, as you said, to make sure and to monitor what is going on within the agency that you know so well, number one. But number two, also in your work with young people, to really find that next Judith Enk to set them up to fight the fights that you've been fighting for so long.
Yeah. Oh, the poor thing, the next Judith Enk. I'm really looking forward to working with the law students. And, you know, one thing I will tell them is, you know, there's nothing like going into work every day and absolutely loving what you do. I'm sure you've got that experience. So people have to, you know, find their niche, find their passion. I'm going to have every member of Congress on speed dial on my iPhone. We have to be vigilant. And, you know, the other thing is, I think on a range of issues, whether it's environmental protection or immigration rights or consumer issues or women's rights, we just need to keep the dialogue very substantive and really focused on the facts and what is or isn't at risk. Because, you know, I've heard from friends and family who did not vote for the presidential candidate that I voted for, and they care about the environment, and they're a little surprised by some of the appointments, and I think there's an opportunity to reach them. And we have no choice but to have that dialogue and have that discussion, because there's so much at risk. You know, literally, is our drinking water going to be safe to consume? Is acid rain going to go off the charts? I mean, largely due to EPA efforts, acid rain levels are down 60% over the last 25 years. We don't want that to go in a different direction. So there's a lot at stake. We will make mistakes as we proceed as informed citizens, but we've got to be in the arena, and we have to try. I mean, my worry is there's just not going to be enough hours in the day, so we've got to be strategic, and, you know, I will rely on other people who are expert on different issues, and I hope they can rely on me on environmental protection.
Judith Enk, Regional Administrator of Region 2 of the U.S. EPA, leaving that post on Friday, headed to Pace Law. And Judith, I can't thank you enough. As a great friend to WAMC and a great friend to me personally, and I thank you so much for spending time with us this morning, and I look forward to speaking to you again very soon as we watch what happens.
Thanks, Joe. My pleasure. Take care.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.